The best way to predict the future is to invent it. Stephen Ambrose brings you up to speed on what the future holds as he explores the latest technology as it impacts our lives.
Well, good morning and welcome to Tech Talk right here on High FM, where we always examine and explain and investigate and try to understand all the crazy tech that's affecting our lives. And essentially nothing goes on unless there's some tech going on. In fact, here I am talking to you over the internet from anywhere in the world, and we are enjoying a show right here in sunny South Africa. So many new things are happening in the world at the moment. And one of the cool new things is that Google, for example, has announced about a 50 million rand investment to grow AI talent, and they call it bolster cybersecurity skills across the country. But where this gets really interesting is they are partnering with local institutions, all the technicons, all the universities, as many of those sort of hubs and technology hubs as they can get involved with, to try to train thousands in this critical area. And the simple truth around this is that there's always been a lot of talk, AI is going to steal the jobs. And in some cases, it is. Like in the good old days, you know, when the Industrial Revolution, instead of people beating a piece of metal with a hammer to death, a machine was used to mold the metal, bend it, do whatever needed to be done. And the Industrial Revolution, it sort of created a world where things could be made that couldn't be made in the past, or made at scale and be sold at prices that were not possible before. Everything could be handmade to some point. But now AI is doing a very similar job. We've discussed this a lot, but it's very important that people understand that jobs are not going away. Jobs are morphing, changing, and the key to staying ahead of all of this is education, is training, is understanding what the market needs, and moving your knowledge base or your education base or your training base to the space that covers that. And that's exactly what Google has announced, and many others, Meta, many other companies, many other countries have recognized that we are now moving into a post-AI world, a world where AI is assumed, programmers are becoming, I wouldn't say redundant, but certainly far less necessary for basic tasks because the AI does it. And what we need now is a new generation of educated, smart people who can operate within the needs of this new economy. So I think it's a great move. It will possibly not create thousands of jobs, but it will definitely create the opportunity for those that the current jobs are no longer relevant, for new jobs, new ways of working, new ways of doing things. And it's an area that I'm going to look at over the next couple of months a lot, because I think this is key to where the world and South Africa is going over the next little while. And what's also interesting is that the government seems to have woken up to the whole technology thing. They often just present a whole ton of buzzwords and bits and pieces, but some of this stuff is happening in real time. For example, the Department of Home Affairs is ramping up its rollout of Home Affairs bases along, you know, in many countries around the world, Europe, America, Australia, Canada. They've actually opened up new sort of, it's the right word, it's not a depot, but a new branch with VFS to give up to do birth certificates, passports, and IDs, which will they'll also deliver to your home, which is a first. Apparently, they're trialing this in these lower level or lower volume places before it goes live in South Africa. So ultimately, you should be able to get your passport, ID, or birth certificate delivered to your door for a fee, of course. But the big difference is that most people who are living overseas or traveling overseas and needed a passport would have to wait up to a year to get a new passport or ID. Now they're sort of guaranteeing that'll happen within a week or within 5 weeks. And to make things even easier, especially if you live far away from some of these centers, they will deliver it to your door within 72 hours, again, for a fee. So that is brilliant. And it's a simple use of technology. Essentially, if you go into a bank or a home affairs department now, a little computer screen they use and this cameras they use to load everything, is exactly what they've transplanted into these far-flung places like Washington and connected it via that miraculous system called the internet back to the systems that operate in South Africa. And then it's simply a matter of getting logistically processing the passport or ID and then shipping it. And shipping today globally should never take many, many weeks, but give them a break. 5 weeks is certainly way better than 5 years. And on that similar note, the state information CETA, which hasn't covered itself with glory over the many years that it's been around, rolled out this week a proof of concept for the Citizen Super App. Now, super apps or portals, as they used to be called, was all the buzzword for a while because people like nothing better than to sort of have a one-stop shop for everything. But globally, and now hopefully in South Africa, all government access will go through this digital platform. And they talk about ID applications, bill payments, and much, much more. And it really would make a lot of sense because right now, the multiple websites that you go to, which often somehow just miraculously don't work too well, makes things incredibly difficult to understand and difficult to operate. And then you need all sorts of connections and whatnot to do it. It certainly would make a lot of sense for CETA and the government to come up with the so-called Citizen Super App, which will give you a lot more ability to connect, work with, understand. And many countries around the world have got that. They've got digital IDs which allow you as a verified citizen or user of the platform to log into a government platform, which gives them access to pretty much every area of the government and their interaction. So you can see your citizen information, you can apply or download documents that you need, you can then update or make changes based on it. And it just makes so much sense that in this connected world that we live in, that you as the citizen should have access to the information that the government has on you. And you could actually view it, see it, manage it, and deal with it in a very organized way. And again, in England, this is popping out with digital IDs for different reasons. But ultimately, all our IDs are digital. The fact that you get issued a physical card is one thing. But the fact simply remains that all IDs, all information, pretty much across the world, and certainly in, for the most part in South Africa, is housed in a database somewhere with information stored somewhere. And you should be able to integrate that, and it certainly can make your life so much easier. No more FICAs, RICAs, TICAs, whatever it is. It's all in one central database, managed in a correct and proper manner. So good luck to them. I hope they get this right. And let's hope they really, really push as hard as possible in order to get this up and running and in a way and a form that it's on your smartphone. Again, the smartphone is probably a huge only entry point into the internet for many, many, many South Africans and people around the world, rather than computers or fancy desktops, which pretty much are going more and more out of favor. So tablets, phones, that sort of stuff are definitely becoming the way in, and a proper app, well organized, makes a huge, huge, huge difference. So good luck to them. I hope they roll it out as soon as possible. And let's hope it's slick and as good as they hope or showed it could be. And on that note, we have a quick break for our sponsors, and we'll be back with quantum computing. Now, I've talked about AI, but let me tell you, if you think AI was a revolution, quantum is like the next generation of revolution. We'll be back straight after this.
This is Tech Talk with Stephen Ambrose on 101.9 High FM.
Well, welcome back. Moving on to the Quantum Leap. I mean, maybe you've seen that TV program. It was quite interesting a while back about time traveling and whatnot. But there are, and this month, have there been some pretty significant breakthroughs in quantum computing. Now, right now, we live in a world of sort of binary digital computing. Everything's a one and a naught. Computers take these ones and takes everything it does, be it a picture, be it a movie, be it information, breaks it down into a binary code. And this code is then processed through a computer or computing device using various algorithms and platforms in a fairly linear fashion. The latest generation of computers are massively parallel. In other words, they're hundreds of little computing engines all working in parallel, all processing information, all managed by an operating system. And we get the computers and the iPads and the phones and the stuff that we use. And that will work pretty well in for the most part. It seems like generally, except in the movies where everything's instant, for the most part, your computer reacts quickly. You ask for information through the internet. That happens fast-ish, mostly. And it's become something you just take for granted. But in the background, and I mentioned this before, we've discussed quantum computing at some level. The next level of computing goes way, way beyond where everything is right now. And it's not just a science fiction dream. It's not just Star Wars or one of those anymore. It is starting to become a real technology that's actually starting to add value and solve problems that right now the fastest computers could not solve. It's as simple as that. Working down to atomic level and beyond into the quantum realm, it sounds super science fiction-y. But this October, some game-changing announcements and advances have been announced. And it very, very, very simply should completely change the way that we work things. As I said, regular computers use binary bits, zeros and ones. Quantum computers use something called a qubit. Now, a qubit, by the nature of quantum computing, can be a zero, a one, or both at the same time, all of them exactly at the same time. And that is all due to something that's called quantum superposition, which then practically allows these computers to crunch massive possibilities, and not numbers, but possibilities in parallel. The problem has been to date is that qubits are finicky. They are prone to errors from the tiniest disturbances, and that's heat, magnetism, light, you name it. It was quantum errors. And so the big news that's coming out this month is how those errors are being tamed and how that chaos of quantum computing is being managed in a way that it can be used in a practical way to solve practical problems at scale, and in a way that doesn't have too much noise or distortion or errors. Because what's the point of processing anything really quickly and you come up with a solution that is completely wrong? We're seeing this a little with AI sort of daydreaming and things going wrong in AI, but that's an algorithmic choice when things are not quite clear to the AI. Let's not go there. But what is happening now is essentially how you clean up quantum computing in a way that makes sense. And the one that's leading the pack again is Google. Now, Google has a massive, IBM were the first and were certainly are still the trailblazers in this space. But Google and others are coming along really quickly. And what they've done, Google's just announced some developments around its Willow chip and what they call Quantum Echoes algorithm, which is pretty much where the whole thing goes. They just announced this, and this breakthrough runs simulations 13,000 times faster than the world's top supercomputer. I mean, you can't even begin to understand. The world's top supercomputers are unbelievably quick and powerful, and here's something that comes along that runs similar simulations 13,000 times faster. Not 1, 2, 3, 4 like Apple and Samsung claim every year they try to charge you for a brand new cell phone. We're talking orders of magnitude faster. And tasks like modeling molecular structures for drug discovery. Imagine accelerating new medicines for diseases that literally have stumped cancers, for example, scientists for years. That is the type of real-world impact we're talking about there. And the spokesman for Google, Harmut Nevin, said practical applications could be as close as 5 years away. They were talking 10, 15, 20 years, but the whole movement of technology has always been exponential. And I make a loose prediction based on just experience that practical applications of these chips will be way quicker than 5 years. 5 years may be when it becomes somewhat more commonplace to have a quantum computer in your pocket, but I doubt that'll happen shortly. Who knows? But the way that these things work, and with the competition and the sheer amount of money and time being put into quantum computing within a very reasonable time, 3 to 5 years, we're going to see massive leaps in all sorts of weather, medicine, you name it, every single element, security, quantum security is already something that everyone's working on. But not to be outdone by this big leap that Google announced, IBM also dropped a massive bombshell because they showed that a key quantum error correcting algorithm that manages the noise and the errors within their quantum computing environment can run on everyday binary AMD chips. And that's the processor in your gaming PC or your Xbox. This means you really don't need exotic hardware to start testing and building quantum systems. So yes, if you have access to a quantum computer in the background, you can run local versions of error correction and management and process unbelievable amounts of data on regular computers. So it's a bit of a hybrid electric petrol type vibe, but it makes it way cheaper and faster to develop. And IBM, less than 5 years, IBM are aiming for a full-scale quantum machine called Starling by 2029. And that puts them, according to their last schedule, a year ahead. As I said earlier, we're looking, Google are talking 5 years, now IBM are talking 4 years. And I believe that these things will be out running, working, and actually doing active, useful stuff well within a 3 to 5 year time frame. And that is going to change absolutely everything. But do not forget that Google and IBM may be big in this stuff, but NVIDIA, which just recently hit $5 trillion market cap, the largest tech company, in fact, one of the largest companies in the world in this last week, because of their work in AI, because of what they're doing around chips and all sorts of stuff around the world, they've launched something called NVQLink, which also launched in the last little while. And this is an open architecture that links quantum processors with their powerful GPUs, those the graphic processing units, the ones that they've been using for AI and all sorts of massive computing and video computing products. And this has been NVIDIA's biggest sort of success. They specialize not in CPUs like AMD and Intel, where they made these sort of chips that ran everything. They started off working very strongly in GPUs, which is graphic processing units, which could then work at many scales ahead for more advanced work, and proved with a little bit of tweaking to be exceptionally good at AI work. But now they're using that same type of computing processing power to work with quantum processors for real-time error correction. So what's happening now is that they let the quantum computer do what the quantum computer does. It comes up with a whole lot of information, which may include a ton of noise and wrong information, or maybe just too much stuff that really is not relevant. And they use standard computers to clean that all up in a way that can be used for everyday use. So it's taking quantum and classical computing and teaming them up for a hybrid supercomputer. So now, ultimately, if you could get a pure quantum computer to work at 13,000 to 15,000 or 20,000 times faster than a standard binary computer, that would be ideal. But right now, their understanding of binary computing and algorithmic work around, which has evolved into a form of machine learning called AI, taking that together with the ability of these quantum computers to massively deal with information at levels and complexity that is impossible for current computing, but simply to take that output, clean it up in a way that makes sense, and give you incredible information. This could change everything to do with chemistry simulations, material design, and pretty much anything like global weather predictions. I mean, the variables, the sheer quantity of variables possible in a manipulation or a management or understanding of something as complex as global weather with all the various inputs is overwhelmingly too big for standard computing. They do a fair job, and I mean, there's definitely some validity in weather, but the joke always goes with weather prediction. You know, the weather report says one thing, but the best thing is to look out the window for the actual weather. Those days may be way, 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 way in the past very, very soon. And on the hardware front, Quandela, which is a European photonic quantum computer, they've created it. It's called Lucy, with 12 qubits at a big French supercomputing center. It was also mentioned recently. And this is, again, a completely different take. Photonic means it uses light particles to create the qubits, which are, according to them, more stable and scalable. So light particles are very different to electrical particles, which other computing devices use. So coupled with the traditional supercomputer, again, there seems to be this whole move towards hybrid workflows. And that blends the best of both worlds. The quantum computer can process variables like nothing else at speeds that make a lot of sense, and the outputs can then be worked on in normal computers to give you and I real world and real benefits in terms of things. So at the same time, there's an enormous amount of startups. Some of them, one of them I was looking at is called Inflection with a Q, very cute. And they are showcasing neural atom tech at NVIDIA events. So more and more tools are being created that are pushing the boundaries in timing and navigation of the massive amounts of data that quantum computing can do. And again, what happens in quantum computing is all the qubits can be anything, depending on chaos theory and all sorts of crazy mathematical and quantum architecture. But understanding or putting information in and getting information out that works in a pretty much analog binary world that we live in. If you touch something, it's there. If you don't touch something, it's not there. Though in the quantum world, it could be there and not there at the same time. And it only appears like many other things when you see it. So we are absolutely moving into a world where it is very, very difficult to understand exactly what is coming and how it works. It is much easier to look at the end result and simply say, quantum computing will enable us to understand the nature of the universe. It's not just, you know, the question to the universe has always been in a joke called 42. But, you know, if you understand that science fiction maybe predated so many of the, or predicted, in fact, so many of the types of things that we see today. I mean, we live in science fiction times. The sheer ability to communicate, the sheer ability to do what we do, to understand what we understand, to have a computer program write other computer programs with mere words from its user, is something that absolutely was science fiction-y. To be able to learn, grow, change, and do things that absolutely change the way that we work. And quantum computing, theoretically, could take us and our understanding of the universe and physics and the way things work to the point where beam me up, Scotty, becomes absolutely possible. I mean, there have been many trials, and you see the science fiction of this, and everyone who travels globally right now would love to find the ability to just beam me up to New York and arrive there a couple of seconds later in good health and with all your arms and legs attached, rather than sit on a plane for 14 hours getting really not great food and your neighbor kicking your head. So quantum computing is where all of this stuff starts to happen. The amount of data to break down the molecular structure of any object and then recreate it, stream it across a distance, and then instantly recreate it somewhere else is absolutely within the purview of quantum computing. And as the computers and everything move in that direction, it sounds clearly like science fiction. But if you can understand at a molecular level why you get cancer, for example, and that can be individually managed on your exact genome, on exactly how you are put together and built, it could be as simple as finding a solution and giving you a particular drug or whatever or treatment, and boom, that particular disease is no longer active in your body. So the movement and the growth and the change of the various levels of quantum computers linked now more and more to highly powerful and structured general normal sort of binary computing is definitely a quantum leap in terms of where these things go. And it's definitely going to change absolutely everything that we think of and do in the near future. And again, in the security architecture, if a computer can create an encryption and a password and a something to lock your information behind some sort of security, the problem with quantum computing, it could easily unravel all of that. So more and more, just on basic architecture, there is quantum security starting to arise. And again, we link that back to what I was saying with Google and all these people. People do not know what they don't know. So the amount of effort that's going into retraining, understanding, working, and dealing with these things is absolutely massive. And just as an aside, before we close off this the segment, Wits University has its own quantum lab with IBM right there in Bromfontein. So they are training the next generation of engineers on quantum physics and quantum computing, and things have absolutely moved at a rapid rate, and South Africa is not to be left out, and Africa is not to be left out. So watch this space. I believe it's going to get bigger, better, faster, and smarter exponentially over the next little while. And on that quantum note, we're going to have a quick break for our sponsors, and I'll be back with much more real-world gadgets and gizmos that I've been, you know, privy to over the last little while. We'll be back straight after this.
This is Tech Talk with Stephen Ambrose on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. So now, talking of extraordinary, this is a time of the year where most major manufacturers are focusing more and more on just getting ready for the holiday season, because 60% or more of their sales, especially for big ticket items like fancy audio, TV, white goods, happen towards the end of the year. Generally, things are a bit tight in South Africa, but generally, bonuses, year-end holidays give people the time, the space, and the ability to go out and get their new TV, their new washing machine, their new whatever it is, and new gizmo or gadget. And it's just a great time of the year for shopping, but not so much for launches. But in the last week, a really interesting new smartphone, and I mean, smartphone launches are the rage. They're one every 2 minutes. But Honor, a company that grew out of the Huawei fold many years ago and have grown into be a pretty globally recognized player within the smartphone space, and certainly are doing great stuff in South Africa, launched a brand new device called the X7D 5G. Love numbers. Really sounds quite official, but it was an X7D. There we go. All new phones pretty much are 5G, but it certainly does differentiate. But what makes this phone particularly interesting and special is, one, it looks and feels extremely premium. It really is well built with solid cameras at the back, a nice, big, clean look with a bright quality screen. But this is a low to mid-range phone, and it is built for, so they say, for people that need a phone that can be tough with all the latest tech and it doesn't break the bank. So right up front, this has got a recommended retail price of just under 4,000 Rand, which in today's money is pretty seriously good value. Anything below 10,000 Rand in a smartphone with proper specifications starts to become more and more interesting, because phones now, the top end are in the 30s to 40s and some even into 50,000 Rand range, which is ridiculous and obscene, except when you understand that globally those prices sort of haven't changed that much, although they have crept. Phones used to be way below $1,000 overall, and now they easily creep over $2,000 with some of the foldables and triple foldables and high-end with massive 1 terabyte memories, et cetera, et cetera. So to buy a really good phone at a reasonable price has become quite a thing for most of us. And what is unique about this phone, and it really does feel that way, and it doesn't look that way. It boasts something they call five-star premium drop protection. It can survive a fall for up to 1.8 meters, thanks to what they call a rhinoceros-like bulletproof vest design and decentralized force absorption. PR speak for solid outer with a very cleverly designed internal structure which transports any shocks in a very controlled way that doesn't result in things breaking. It also has an IP65 rating for water and dust, so you can drop it in water, you can get it dirty, you can do all sorts of things. The odd beer can go swimming in a glass of wine if you really wish, without much problems. Under the hood, and this is where it gets really interesting, it has a massive 6,500 milliamp hour dual battery, which is clever because it's split into two smaller batteries. And this literally can give you more than a day or two's worth of endurance. It also comes with relatively fast 35 watt charging, which gets you back up and running from 0 to 80% or 20 to 80% in around about 25 minutes, which, on the top up on the go, really makes a big difference. They've also included something which they call the instant AI button, which triggers quick AI features like scene recognition in photos or voice to text notes. And those are pretty slick. So it comes with Android, obviously. It's got the full Android experience, unlike some other Chinese phones that have fallen foul of the USA sanctions. It is available in desert gold or velvet black, and it will be on the stores from November 1, which is great, which is pretty much next week. So it's an absolutely ideal phone for budget-conscious users. And, generally, I've found that the quality and the longevity of an Honor phone is pretty good. It's right up there with some of the top manufactured phones. And it's coming in at prices and certainly functionality versus price that is quite difficult to beat from the other sort of mainstream manufacturers. Not to say that there are other alternatives from Samsung, from many other players, Oppo, you name it. There are a lot of players in this space. But I think everybody who's looking for a smartphone has to look at the credentials of the company. How good is the service? How generally available is it? What else does the ecosystem allow within, like, for example, Samsung Pay, Apple Pay, things like that? Obviously, once you're in the Google ecosystem, everything that Google can do and more of the Google AI stuff now is possible and available across all these phones. The processors can do it. It may not have the full AI experience of some of the top-end devices simply because the processors are not that level yet. But it certainly does allow you to do a ton of the AI stuff. And it comes with a big screen, 6.8-inch. It comes with a Snapdragon processor, one of the new generation, decent quality Snapdragon processors, which gives you all the stuff that you need. And again, as I said, they've now got to close 10% of market share on it, and they seem to be doing a great job of value. And at the same time, just to note, this is not the main focus of my review right now, but Honor have a phone called the Magic V5 Foldable, which is very similar in overall look and feel to the Samsung Fold, but comes in about 10,000 Rand cheaper, and it's super slim at 4.1 millimeters. That also was launched in South Africa and will be available very soon at around about 37,000 Rand. As I said, not cheap. So they're going from 4,000 Rand to 38,000 Rand, actually. They always do it at 37,999. For a Rand, we'll just call it a straight 40,000. And it's definitely one of the slimmest foldables. It's 8.8 millimeter thick when folded. That's two 4.1 millimeter devices with a hinge, which is pretty cool. So look at it. It's got flagship level cameras, flexible OLED screen, bit expensive, but it certainly does bring a lot of the foldable value for a lot less than the other foldables on the market. So watch the space. There's more and more of that coming. And on that note, we're going to have a quick break for our sponsors once again, and then I'll be back with some hints and tips and just a little bit of last information around a few things that we're going to expect all the holiday seasons, things to look at straight after this.
This is Tech Talk with Stephen Ambrose on 101.9 High FM.
Oh, welcome back. And just to give you a quick wrap up around the gizmos and gadgets that are to be expected. As I said, it's pretty much everything's been released. It's now the 2025 lineup of TVs, cell phones out there. The next big generational shift, the new products will come towards the early part of next year. But for example, Samsung's TV lineup has been completely revamped. There's some absolutely amazing QLED models starting at $20,000, along with many other TVs in the OLED and QLED space, QLEDs being the cheaper LCD versions, OLED being the OLED self-emissive diode, and now mini-LED tech is starting to roll out in time for summer in South Africa. So watch that space. There are a lot of good deals. Black Friday is coming up. We'll talk about that next week. And a lot of elements in the November space are going to sort of come together to give you options to spend that little bit of money you've been saving for all these gizmos and gadgets. But smartphones have never been more competitive, never more well-priced. And as always, go out, check them out, see what you like, and look at the value versus your usage. Some people want powerhouses to play games. Other people just want to make phones, read emails, browse the AI web, and do what you need to do. So check it out and see what you like. But Honor come really well recommended in terms of value and quality. So to wrap up, here are some just practical tips, things that I think we really have to be aware of, spend some time thinking about. And with AI everywhere, you have to be super careful. It is so easy simply because you put something into Google AI or an AI like Grok or whatever. It gives you an output and you think, oh, this is cool. It's checked everything. How can it be wrong? But built into these algorithms is the ability to hallucinate. And always you have to be absolutely, these are machines, not people. They cannot differentiate between fact and no fact. So if it picks up rubbish somewhere in the internet and it's convincing enough and repeated enough, the AI will repeat it to you in an authoritative way that makes you feel like this is absolute truth. It's not in all cases, and especially around specific things. Lawyers have been caught with this, asking the AI to help them put together a defense and ask it to quote cases, and it does so. Except those cases are completely and utterly made up using the same formats as standard case reporting verbiage, and it's rubbish. So you have to be very careful what the outputs come. And this goes down all the way to recipes. Verify the ingredients, because some of them are just so obscure or so crazy that it's impossible. Horn of God knows what would be one of the key ingredients in a steak recipe. So be very, very careful. And often you can say to the AI, this is where it gets really useful. When you ask for something, tell it to only give you absolute truth, very easily understood or actual information that is verifiable, not to make up or to fill in any blanks that it may have. And on that note, before we hallucinate too much with our AI, I'm afraid we have to call it a day. It's been another information-filled and rather future-looking session of Tech Talk right here on High FM. But to stay in touch and to understand what's happening in this crazy world, stay tuned every Thursday, 11 o'clock, right here on High FM. This is Stephen Ambrose for Tech Talk.